All right, we're beginning here on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, six lines down. Amar Rav Chisda, Hakol Modim Bebala Nida Shemeshalim Knas. Everybody agrees that if the violation here was Bia with a Nida, that he still has to pay Knas for the Bitulim. So now, when we say Kuli Amo over here, it's not really Kuli Amo, because we're about to bump into Rav Nechunya Ben Akana's position, who doesn't agree with this, which is that when you have Karet, that does override, that has a din of commonly derabim minei, that the more severe punishment overrides the lesser of the punishments. But until what we've seen until now, which is Shimon HaTeimani and Rabbi Shimon Ben Asya, who say that the qualification is either Isha Sheish Bahavaya or Isha Haruya Lekaima, either one of those qualifies an individual to be Chayav in the case of the Knas. Over here, by Nida, you have both of those aspects. Because the manda amar yesh bahavaya, according to the one who says that as long as you can create kiddushin with the woman, then you would be chayav in the knas, hanami yesh bahavaya. Over here, you're able to create kiddushin with a woman who is in Nida. We saw this earlier. Even though there is a machloket, whether you create nisuin or chupah benida, everybody agrees that with regards to kiddushin, you can't have kiddushin with a nida because over there it says v'tei nidata alav, and we learned from that back in the Gemara in Yevamot that kiddushin is chal even with a woman who is a nida. The manda amar ruya lekayima hanami ruya lekayima, and according to one who says that you only pay the knas when the woman is someone that you can maintain as a wife, this woman is also maintainable as a wife because nida passes. Nida is only a temporary state; it's not a permanent state. It's a woman that he can marry. And therefore, both of them would agree that in this instance, you would be chayav de knas, even though the violation involves a chiyuv karet. Unlike some of the issues or possible issues in our Mishnah where they would disagree, because there the chiyuv karet creates a problem for kiyum, you're not allowed to keep the women. And possibly the chiyuv karet also creates a problem for havaya, the ability to create kiddushin with the individual. And because you are lacking in both of those areas, they would say with regards to Chiyuve Karet in our Mishnah, that over there is no Knas. But with regards to Nida, they agree that there is a Knas. Now that is Lafuke. That is to the exclusion of the opinion, Mid Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana. Because, the Tanya, Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana, Yau said, Yom HaKippurim Kishabbat Tashlumim. Because Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana draws a parallel between Yom Kippur to Shabbat. We know that from the Mishnayot in Megillah, Ein Bein Shabbat Yom HaKippurim. There's no difference between Shabbat and Kippurim. Ela, the punishment, which is the punishment for Shabbat is Chiyuv Skila, and the punishment for Yom HaKippurim is a Chiyuv Karet. So what Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana is saying, that Yom Kippur gets the same status as Shabbat. If you violated the Shabbat and at the same time caused monetary damage, then you would be exempt from paying the monetary damages because you're chayav skila for the Shabbat. What Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana says is that the same is true by Yom HaKippurim. If you violated the Isur Malacha of Yom HaKippurim, you'd be chayav karet. And if you're chayav karet, you'd also be exempted from the tashlumim that were associated with that violation. Ma Shabbat mitchayev b'nafsho upatur min tashlumim. Just like by Shabbat, a person who is then subject to a loss of life, meaning punishable by mitat beitin, upatur min tashlumim, and that exempts him from monetary compensation. Av Yom HaKippurim, so to Yom HaKippurim, mitchayev b'nafsho, he loses his life in a different way. That is, bidei shamayim, he loses his life because it is a karet. Upatur min tashlumim, therefore she be exempted from the tashlumim. So now we're going to ask, my taima the Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana that he sees karet being equated to mitat beitin? It's clear that not everybody agrees with Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana. Most believe that the exemption comes from mitot beitin and not from the chiyuv karet that is a mitah bidei shamayim. And generally, or the perspective is that when it comes to a beitin adjudicating or sentencing an individual, they can only deal with things that they are on the hook for or things that they can actually execute on. So when it comes to karet, that's not something they can deal with. So they can't look at that in the perspective of what they do with this individual. So he's chayav tashlumim and chayav karet. As far as they're concerned, karet doesn't exist. That's in Hashem's hands. What they can deal with is the tashlumim, so they can obligate him in the tashlumim. When it comes to chiyuvei mitat beitin, over there, that's something that they can execute on. And therefore, they will take that into consideration when it comes to the Tashlumim, and they'll exempt the individual Tashlumim because of the Mitah. I'm not going to get into it too deeply because the upcoming Gemara will deal with this, but the perspective over here is one of two perspectives, which is either Kamalev Derabbi Minei, when you have a more severe punishment, the lesser punishment is exempted. Again, we'll talk about this much more in detail in the upcoming Dapim. Or we have a perspective of Kedei Rishato, that we only punish him for one violation, not for two violations. So either way, the exemption over here is created both because there's a Chiyuv Mita, which is a more severe punishment, and the fact that we don't want to double jeopardy. We want to punish him twice for the same violation, even though the violation manifests in two ways. One is Chilul Shabbat, the other one is that he did Hezek, he did damage at that time. Nevertheless, we don't want to hold him accountable for two things, to punish him twice for the same action, and therefore we'll give him the more severe of the two actions. Another reason to believe that there's a difference between Chiyuvei Mita Bidei Adam versus Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shemaim, because Chiyuvim that Beit Din executes on, there is no changing the outcome. I mean, if that is the sentence that the person is deserving of, there is no mercy rule, there is no tshuva, the person has to die. On the other hand, when it's Bidei Shemaim, the person has the chance to unwind the punishment. So therefore, to exempt him from payment with the possibility that he won't get the other punishment because maybe he'll do tshuva, maybe he'll rectify the situation, that's another reason that the other chachamim believe that mita bidei shemayim does not have the same rules as mita bidei adam or bidei beit din. So in the case of mita bidei adam, everybody agrees that that is the case. The question is, by karet, does karet then live up to the same level as the din of mita bidei adam? But on the other hand, Rav Nechunya ben Kana clearly believes that. And what is the reason why? So we're going to have Amoraim propose different reasons. We're going to have Abaye here, and the next Amud we'll have Rava and then Ravashi. So Namar Abaye, Nermar Ason Bidei Adam, Nermar Ason Bidei Shemaim. We have the word Ason that appears in Parshat Mishpatim, Im Asoniyeh, which is in the case where two individuals are quarreling, and then they end up hitting a woman who is pregnant, and it caused the woman to miscarry. If that's all that happens and the individual who caused the woman to miscarry has to pay or compensate the woman for the loss of the baby. On the other hand, if the woman is killed in that, meaning that there was a strike that went, instead of going to the other individual, hit this woman and killed the woman, then in that instance, the person is exempt from paying the compensation for the lost children because he killed the woman and he's going to be subject to the death penalty for killing the woman. So over there, the term ason is used with regards to Bidei Adam. V'nermar ason bidei shemaim. Ason bidei shemaim is with regards to Binyamin. When Yaakov is reluctant to send Binyamin down to Mitzrayim, because he's already lost Yosef, Shimon and Enu, he doesn't want to say Binyamin because maybe an ason, something bad will happen to him on the way. Right? And the famous Chazal over there, wait, bad things can't happen at home. And the answer is that when a person puts themselves in a position of danger, then Hashem does sometimes take out the punishment at that time because you're in a position where the punishment can come through. So there's ason. So there we have ason bidei adam and ason bidei shemaim. So the word ason is used in both places. Ma ason amur bidei adam patur min hatashlumim. Just like the ason that is talking about in Parshat Mishpatim, where the death there will cause the individual to be exempted from payment. Af ason amur bidei shemaim patur min hatashlumim. So too the ason that is mentioned by Yaakov and Binyamin, that ason is not where he expects people to kill Binyamin. He says some bad thing will happen on the journey. Some animal will come and eat him up. Something bad could happen in that way. That ason bidei shemaim also is patur min hatishlumim. Matkifla ravad rava mimai. Tichi ka mizahar luhu Yaakov libnei al tzinim upachim di bidei shemaim ninhu. Who says that when Yaakov comes and warns his children, be careful with Binyamin, because he's warning them about issues that come in Hashemayim, things that are not bidei adam, like tzinim upachim, which we'll deal with in a second. Let's loosely translate him now to be fever, colds, and overheating. Tzinim upachim, which are the result of not being properly dressed or properly sheltered from the elements. So who says that that's what he's worried about, to bidei shemayim ninhu, because those are things that are not bidei adam. Dima al arya viganve di bidei adam ninu. Maybe he's talking about lions and marauders, thieves, robbers that are coming that will attack them and kill Binyamin. Meaning that who says that Yaakov is warning his children simply about things that are up to Hashem? Maybe he's warning them about things that can be controlled, that have to do with other people making decisions. Where it says, Atu Yaakov, aha izhair, aha lo izhair. What do you mean? Maybe you're right. But Yaakov only warned them about marauders and robbers. He did not warn them about tzinim upachim. Yaakov, akol mili izhair. He warned them about everything. So the word ason by Yaakov definitely has a broader meaning. It means bidei adam. It also means bidei shamayim. But the fact that it means bidei adam and bidei shamayim shows you that that ason, when carried over to Parshat Mishpatim, where there the ason only meant bidei adam, we see that the word ason carries a bigger definition than simply punishment at the hands of man or punishment by the decisions of man, but rather it's ason, things that even are in the hands of Hashem, things that come that have nothing to do with other individuals, and yet it's still called an ason, and therefore Ibn Chunya ben Hakana believes that that ason that exempts you from payment also includes these issues. Now the Gemara is going to challenge the idea of what is called bidei shemaim and what's called bidei adam. Where it says, tzinim pachim bidei shemaim ninu. Are tzinim and pachim really up to Hashem and not up to bidei adam? V'hatanya. Don't we have a famous braita called bidei shemaim? Chutz mitzinim pachim. Everything is in the hands of heaven except for tzinim pachim. Shenemar. Because the pasuk says in Mishlei, tzinim pachim b'derech ikesh, shomer nafsho yirchak mehem. So the tzinim and pachim are on the perverted path. Person wants to take care of himself, yirchak mehem. He'll distance himself from him, which sounds like it's in your control. As long as you distance yourself from the tzinim and pachim, they will not affect you. You have the ability to prevent yourself from getting a cold. You have the ability to protect yourself from becoming overheated, getting fevers, or dehydrating. Those are all in your control. So since they're in your control, those are called bidei adam. They should not be called bidei shemaim, and that's exactly what the Braita says. Akol bidei shemaim, everything is controlled by heaven, except for these items which are in your control. You can make decisions that will prevent you from facing these ailments or getting these sicknesses. So therefore, they really should be called bidei adam, and not bidei shemaim. Now, the case of tzinim pachim is an interesting issue. Rashi said tzinim pachim is kor v'chom, from cold and from heat. In that both sides, both issues, elements of the weather that you have to protect yourself from. But if you look carefully in the Gemara in one place, in the beginning says, Atzinim upachim, and in the other place it says, Tzinim pachim, without a vav, in a chibur. And Rashi, Divrei Matchil, does not have a vav in it, neither does Tosafot, Divrei Matchil. And therefore there is the interpretation that Tosafot brings from the Rashbam, which is that Tzinim upachim are not two separate things, but rather, tzinim is cold, pachim is from the word pachu mokesh, which means a trap. Don't get trapped by the cold. And that's what it means, that tzinim pachim means the person can prevent themselves from the cold trap, from the fever trap, from getting sick. And they just, if you dress properly, if you don't expose yourself to the elements, then you can protect yourself from those issues. Now Tosafot obviously asks the question, what does that mean? Akol bidei shemaim, chutz mitzinim upachim. He asks it from two perspectives. One perspective, which he asks it from, which he asks at the way end, but is more of a theological question. And there he asks, don't we have another statement of Chazal, Kol Dibidei Shemayim Chutz Miirat Shemayim? So how do I reconcile between these two statements? So Tosafot says that a Kol Dibidei Shemayim Chutz Miirat Shemayim is talking about the character traits of the individual. How the individual is born, the strengths, the powers, the kochot, they're embedded inside of an individual. That's a kol bidei shemayim. A person, a child that is born, he's born with certain weaknesses, strengths, character traits that will allow him to do different things in life. And even there, they talk about whether he's poor, he's rich, chacham, tipesh. But the only thing that is not determined is tzadik virasha. That's what it means, chutz mirat shemayim. Shem endows you with whatever gifts he gave you. Then your decision is what you do with those gifts. You can make a decision to use them to be a rasha. You can use those same gifts to be a tzaddik, and that's what it means, chutz mirat shemayim. That no matter what you are granted, or what strengths, weaknesses, and character traits that you are granted, you still have a decision about what to do with those traits. And therefore, that's what it means, akol bidei shemayim, chutz mirat shemayim. On the other hand, akol bidei shemayim, chutz mi tzinim upachim, is during the lifetime of the individual. That an individual has the ability to prevent certain things from happening to him. And that is tzinim impachim. He has control over that. On the other hand, there are certain things that a person cannot control, that Hashem, when he brings these items on an individual, person has no choice about them. And Tosfot asks about that. He says, person shouldn't stand in a dangerous place. Shouldn't a person shouldn't go walk under a ladder? Person shouldn't walk by a wall that is weak and looks like it's going to fall over. Why not? Right? If it's a kol bidei shemayim, mechutz mitzinim apachim, sounds like you have no control over these issues. So why should you avoid dangerous places if it's a kol bidei shemayim? So then, sounds like you could be shomer yourself from puranut. Sounds like from that, that if you, the Gemara suggests, don't walk under bad ladders, don't walk under walls that are toppling, that means that you have control. And by avoiding those areas, it's actually better for you. So now, Tosfot says, listen, the truth is that anybody can kill themselves. That is not a chiddush, that it doesn't take any expertise. People can do really dumb things. People make bad decisions. And making those bad decisions, they clearly can put themselves in danger. But, what we're talking about here is, if God determines that he wants this to happen to you, then you have no way to prevent it. And that if God determines that this is the sickness that you're going to get, that the ailment that you're going to get, that's not something that you can control or prevent. On the other hand, tzinim upachim, lolam al yavo alav beonis im rotzeli yizayar. On the other hand, when it comes to tzinim upachim, that is something that can never be imposed on you. That's not something that can happen to you against your will, because it's determined by your decision making. Your decision making can make that go away or stop it from happening, but in other areas, if Hashem decides that that is the punishment, that is what it is coming to you, over there you have no control over it, you have no way to stop it. That's the way Tosfot deals with this idea of kol bidei shemayim chutz mitzinim pachim. He narrows down the scope of what this means. He says that it's when things happen to an individual. Of course, when you can put yourself in danger and then something could happen. So you should avoid that. You should watch out. You should be careful. You should take care of yourself. It's a mitzvah de'oraita to take care of yourself. And that's in general. But if min hashamayim, they decide that this is the time that you're going to have this issue happen, then with regards to tzinim upachim, you still have the ability to protect yourself, because that's not controlled or that's not forced upon you min hashamayim. On the other hand, with other things, if min hashamayim, they decide that's what you're going to have, then there's no way for you to prevent it. You have to deal with whatever they give you. Now, the two, you might ask another question, which is, aryeh v'ganve b'yidei adam ninhu? Since when is aryeh and robbers b'yidei adam? V'amar Yosef, v'chein tani Rabbi Chiya, miyom shecharab beit ha-mikdash, from the day of the Churban HaBayit, afal pi shebitlu Sanhedrin, even though the Sanhedrin was nullified or disbanded, arba mitot lo bitlu, the punishments of the Sanhedrin have not been discarded. Lo bitlu? What do you mean they're not bitlu? If there's no Sanhedrin, there's no arba mitot beitin. Habadlu, what do you mean? They're gone. There's no Sanhedrin anymore. You can't have executions. We don't have capital punishment. Ella din arba mitot lo bitlu. The carrying out of the sentencing or the punishments that are arba mitot beitin have not gone away. They don't manifest themselves exactly the way that they did when they were mitot beitin. They show up in a little different form, which is mishnit chayev skila o nofel minagag o chayad dor sato. Person who is chayav skila, then he ends up falling off a roof, or he gets eaten up by an animal. So Rashi explains here, the way that they used to do skila, we know that from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, is that they used to push them off a high roof, and then they used to stone them afterwards. So then a person falls from a roof, that's similar, or simulates the punishment of skila. Chaya dor sato is a case where the animal usually knocks them down, and then rips them apart. So the knocking down or being hit to the ground is the equivalent of the skila. Mishne chayev sreifa, someone who is chayav the punishment of sreifa, ono fel b'dileka, is caught in a fire, or nachash mekisho, or he is bitten by a snake, and the venom of the snake burns inside of the individual like a sreifa. Mishne chayev hariga, someone who is chayav to die by the sword, o nimsar l'machut, which is the punishment in their day, the Roman punishment was beheading, to be killed by the sword, or marauders or robbers attack him. Mishinet chayev chenek, someone who is chayev chenek min haTorah, o tovea banar, drowns, o meit b'seromki, or dies with this ailment that causes a person to not be able to breathe or chokes off his ability to breathe. So all these issues we see included in here is aryeh, which is being attacked by a wild animal, as well as marauders or robbers coming here. These are mitot bidei adam. These are things, these are executions that we would not call mitot bidei shamayim, but rather mitot bidei adam. So what the answer is epoch. Flip it around. Aryeh v'ganve bidei shamayim. This is the exact opposite of how we started. That the lion attacking and the marauders attacking, that is bidei shamayim. Tzinim u'pachim bidei adam. That is bidei adam. Now, what is the definition? As Rashi says over here, bidei shamayim and bidei adam, it's not that they're done by man. It's not that they're executed by man, but rather there is human involvement. Tzinim pachim is because you did something wrong. You made, you're posheya, and you don't take care of yourself. That's where you get tzinim u'pachim. That doesn't mean somebody makes you have a cold. That means that if you didn't take care of yourself, you get the cold. On the other hand, when it comes to Aryeh and Ganvei, even though Ganvei, robbers, marauders, are human beings that are attacking, that's not called Bidei Adam, because the cause of that was ordained Min HaShemayim because of the way that you acted, right? The way that you acted. Now, that's happening Min HaShemayim. They're punishing you Min HaShemayim for something that you did, and that's called Bidei Shamayim. So even though there's an individual or a man that's carrying it out, nevertheless, that's called bidei shamayim. So we've changed really the definition or how we view bidei adam and bidei shamayim. Before we thought that bidei shamayim is, bidei adam is something that was basically executed by people or involved in people, and bidei shamayim was something that was executed by heaven. We flipped the definition to the other way around. What is the cause of the problem? If you're the cause of the problem is bidei adam, then no matter how it's executed, that's called bidei adam. And something that's caused by your action that Hashem punishes, then no matter how that execution happens, that's called bidei shamayim. Two things here. One is mechayom shekarab beit hamikdash. Tosafot asks, what is the churban habayit? What does that have to do with the stopping of the punishment of the executions of Arba Mitot Beitin? Because we knew already that 40 years before the churban, the Sanhedrin leaves the Lishkata Gazit because they no longer want to execute on dinei nefashot because there were too many murderers running around. And they weren't going to be able to deal with it, or they couldn't execute on it. It was going to come haphazard justice, or they were going to be killing too many people. And so they leave the Lishkata Gazit because they can't deal with the situation at hand. And therefore, there's no more capital punishment. So why does the Gemara here say that the Arba Mitot Beitin only switched over at Churban HaBayit? That already happens prior to that point in time. So what you can say is, Churban HaBayit is a loose definition. Churban HaBayit doesn't literally mean the Churban itself. Means at the time of the Churban, which is even the era of the Churban, which is even the 40 years before. Tosafot over here gives two other possibilities. One is that in the interim, between the time that the Sanhedrin leaves Lishkat HaGazit to the Churban HaBayit, we know from the Gemarot that the Big Day Kohen Gadol are mechaper on certain mitot beitin. And therefore, in the interim, the Big Day Kohen Gadol acted as the mechaper, and they took care of the situation. Once there's a Churban HaBayit, the Big Day Kohen Gadol are no longer available, and then we move to these punishments. That's one answer he gives. Or the other answer he gives is that the Sanhedrin had the ability or the right to go back to Lishkat HaGazit, and they might have sometimes done that. They might have sometimes gone back to Lishkat HaGazit to deal with capital crimes or to do things that can only be done by the Sanhedrin. But Tosafot says, well, if that's the case, why couldn't they go back to adjudicate a murder case? He says, because they left for that reason. They left for the reason is that they didn't want to deal with murder cases anymore. That, for sure, they did not go back for. But other issues they might have gone back for, and therefore there were crimes possibly punished or capital punishments that were executed during that period of time, just not for ritzicha, not just not for killing, because we know before the Churban and actually through the Churban that Yerushalayim becomes a free-for-all, and there are people and groups and vying groups for control of Yerushalayim that are killing each other wholesale. A terrible situation. You can read Josephus about how bad or what the deterioration of the situation in Yerushalayim, even with the siege of the Romans around Yerushalayim, that they're killing each other inside. And we know that from the stories of the Gemara as well as Josephus, that there was a huge problem with murder. And that's why the Beitin pulled out and said, like, we can't deal with this anymore because it's become a free-for-all. We don't control the situation anymore. That was one question. Tosafot asked another question, which is a much more serious question. And when that is here, the Gemara says that when Arba Mitot Beitin are suspended because there's no Sanhedrin, because the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, then enter in these alternatives, punishments. He says, the famous question that's asked, he says, Avakasha, the Chazina Kama Avaryanim, Va'ovdei Ovodat Kuchavim, Shemetim Al Mitatam. We see many people who are wholesale sinners, people who worship Avodah Zarah, and they die a peaceful death on their bed. What happened to all of these punishments? So Tosfot says, V'yesh lamar, da'edei tshuva, according to Baruch Hu Meikel, that sometimes a person does tshuva, And then Hashem lightens up on the punishment. Sometimes he even forgives them completely. Or maybe they have some merit that has protected them, and therefore he doesn't take retribution in this world. Obviously, the other answer is that sometimes Hashem does not want the person to get punished in this world, because then they will be zocheh l'olam haba. Over there, he wants to let them use up all this chuyot in this world, so that they get punished in the olam haba. Now, that might be a similar answer, but then you would say it, or I would phrase it in this manner, which is, when Hashem wants to punish for the arba mitot be'itin, this is how he carries out the punishment. That doesn't mean that Hashem will always use these punishments, or individuals will also always be punished by these punishments if they violate the sin. That may depend on a number of other factors, whether Hashem wants to carry out the execution of this individual, whether, number one, he wants to punish them in this world. Number two, maybe they have a zchut, that is tolelehem, or maybe they're doing tshuva, and therefore they become almost like punishments bidei shamayim now, instead of punishments bidei adam, because the sentence comes down from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then they look more like karet than punishments bidei adam because of that, which is that you have the ability to rectify the situation or stop them. That's what Tosafot asks about this, which is the basic fundamental question of Rasha b'tov lo. How is it possible that the Rasha has a good life? And Tosafot is trying to give answers for that in this context. That's a bias suggestion as to the position of Rav Nechunya ben Hakana. He learns it out from the word ason, ason. Rav Amar, time of the Rav Nechunya ben Hakana mihocha. He says that it's from this pasuk that's found in Parshat Kedushim. Ve'im haleim yalimu am aretz et dineihem min ha'ishahu. If the people of the land look askance at the violations of this individual, b'tito mizaro l'molech, when he gives over his child to the molech, the worship of the molech, santi ani et panai ba'ishahu, then I will take care of that individual. I will put myself or turn myself towards this individual, u'b'mishpachto, and his family, v'chrati oto, and then I will cut him off. So then it says, amrat Torah karet sheli kimita shalachem. Hashem says, if you don't do what you're supposed to do in terms of the mitah, then I will take over and I'll give them karet. So you see in this pasuk an equation between what should have been carried out, the sentence that should have been carried out by bidei adam, by beit din. You, the Am Haaretz, should have taken care of this. You should not have looked away, hidden yourself, and said, we're not going to deal with this. You should have punished this individual for giving over his children to the molech. But if you don't do it, and you don't carry out the execution's property, I'll take over. And I'll then be karet. I'll give the punishment of karet. So you see that there's an equation between what you should have done in mitah bidei adam to the karet that Hashem will give. Ma mitah shelachem patur min hatashlumim, av karet sheli patur min hatashlumim. Just like your punishments, your executions would have exempted the individual from payment, so too, my karet will exempt the individual from tashlumim. Ma'ika ben Rav and Abaye. Now Rav and Abaye's explanations of Rav Nechunya ben Hakana, is it simply just what's the source? Or is there a nafka mina l'alocha between their positions? The Gemara says, Ikbeinau zar shechal truma. The difference between them and the nafka mina between them is an individual who's not a kohen, who eats truma. Someone who's not entitled to eat truma goes ahead and eats truma. Eating truma is a chiyuv mita bidei shamayim. It's not karet, it's chiyuv mita bidei shamayim. Rashi over here makes a broad statement about the difference. He says karet affects him and his offspring, whereas chiyuv mita bidei shamayim only affects him, not his offspring. There might be other factors that come into play. We've learned them before when we spoke more in detail about the punishment of karet. Machlokes Rishonim, exactly what karet is, and that'll play into what you think the difference between karet and mita bidei shamayim is, but clearly, karet is more chamur than mita bidei shamayim. In that case, the Abaye patur, ulerova chayav. According to Abaye, you will be patur. According to Rava, you'll be chayav. Because Rava says the equation of Rechunya ben Hakana is specific to karet. The pasuk that he brings is karet equals mitot beitin. That's the pasuk that he's showing. If you don't do the mitot beitin, then I will carry out karet. On the other hand, Abaye says mita bidei adam is equivalent to mita bidei shamayim. Mita bidei shamayim can manifest itself in karet or in chiyuv mita bidei shamayim. Anything that's min hashamayim is the same as things that are bidei adam. That's what the ason teaches you. So according to Abaye, you will be patur from tashlumim in a case of chiyuv mita bidei shamayim, because chiyuv mita bidei shamayim is also called an ason. On the other hand, for Rava, who says that the pasuk only equates by the molech karet to mitot bidei adam, then only karet has that exemption. Chiyuv mita bidei shamayim does not have that exemption. The Gemara says, "Ul Abaye patur." According to Abaye, are you really patur? V'am Rav Chista, Molde Rav Nechunya ben Hakana, Begonev Chelbo Shel Chevei Ro V'Achalo Shu Chayav. A person who steals the chel of the fats that are asurim of his friend, vachalo, and then he eats it, he is chayav. So because over there he was gunav, he stole something, so he's chayav for the monetary compensation. But then he also ate it, which makes him chayav karet. And we said over there that even Rabbi Chuni ben Akana, who says normally karet, overrides tashlumim, over here that would not be the case. Why? Because the gneva and the eating of the chaylev are not simultaneous. The violations are actually separate. You enter the violation of gneva before you ever enter the violation of chaylev. When the individual steals the chaylev, that's the moment when he makes the kinyan on the chaylev, that's when he becomes chayav for gneva. He's only chayav karet for eating, ingesting the chaylev. That happens after the fact. That will not provide you with the exemption because you were already chayav, obligated in the monetary compensation before you ever came to the punishment of karet. When you get to the punishment of karet, that then is separate from the monetary obligation. Just because you're going to be chayav mitah, whether it's in beitin or whether it's karet, that does not exempt you from any payments that you had. All your bills are now wiped out. That's not what it means. It means if something happens simultaneously in that same act, then if you're getting a severe punishment for that same act will not make you obligated for a monetary payment. But if the two are separate, then obviously you're chayav in the monetary payment. So here the monetary obligation came first, because you stole. Then you became chayav karet for eating. That's a later thing. That will not protect you in this case. Alma, demidono de agbe, kanyo. From the moment that you picked it up, that's when you became chayav in gneva, that's when you made the kinyan. Mitchayvev in asholo av adachile. But the obligation of karet will only happen once you've eaten it, once you've ingested it. Hachanami, the same should be true by truma. Bidno de agbe kanye. So when he picked it up, he became chayav in terms of the obligation to repay the truma. He stole the truma. In order to be a zar that eats truma, he's stealing the truma from the kohen, and then he's going to eat the truma. So if he stole first, that's the monetary obligation. Then, mitchaye ben asho, lovi ad achile. But the obligation or the chiyuv mita bidei shemaim is only once he eats it. So therefore you have a separation between the action associated with the gneva and the action associated with the chiyuv karet or the chiyuv mita bidei shemaim. So how could you claim by a zar shechal chuma that Abaye would say you're patur? You're chayav. You know why you're chayav? Because you stole the chuma first. That's when you became chayav for the gneva. You eat the chuma. That's a separate punishment that has nothing to do with the gneva. When it says, achar mai iskinan, what's the case here? A person stuck the thing into his mouth. So he never picked it up. It was placed into his mouth. He opened up his mouth. The guy had a skewer and stuck the truma right into his mouth. Mar says, sof, came in delase, kanye. So since he's going to chew it, then he's koneit. The chiyuv mita bidei shemaim only happens when you swallow it. Once you start chewing it, you've now ruined the truma. The truma is not returnable anymore. Since it's not returnable anymore, you basically created the damage at that point in time. And since you created the damage at that point in time, you're going to be chayav at the end. Even though maybe your friend who picked it up and took it and made a kinyan was the one who stole it, but you make it irreversible in that way that you chew it. Right, you're still chayav in truma, which is a keren v'chomesh. You have to pay back the actual amount plus an additional fifth in like kind produce that you have to pay it back. So here, you're going to be obligated for that as soon as you start chewing on it. That's what's going to ruin it. But you're not going to be chayav for mita bidei shemayim, for eating truma, until you ingest it, until you actually swallow it. So again, there's a separation between the timing of the gneva and the timing of the chiyuv mita bidei shemayim for eating the truma, which you're not allowed to do. Zar she'achal truma. So because of that, again, we'd have a problem. Now, why you have to chew on it, or what that makes a difference, either your chewing on it indicates that you agree with your friend stealing of the truma, and that's what makes it that you're now chayav for the truma, is because you, instead of spitting it back out, you basically chewed it, which showed that you were a party to the gneva. Or again, the possibility is that you make it irretrievable or irreversible now once you chew it, because you've destroyed it. But that's still not enough to be mechayev you, because in terms of being chayav for eating truma, you have to get hana'ah. You have to get the pleasure at the time that it's being destroyed. That only really happens when you swallow it. Once you've swallowed it, that's the ultimate destruction and hana'ah that comes from the eating of the food. So we say, no, he took it on a skewer, but he pushed it so far back in the guy's throat that there was no chewing necessary. He could swallow it. Mar says, hey, chidami, what's the case there? If he could spit it back up, let him spit it back up. He's chayav because he chose not to spit it back up. Ilo matzila dura. If he can't retrieve it, then am I chayav? He was basically an ones then because he swallowed it, not because he chose to, but because it was so far back. So Rashi says over here, the reason that when he puts it deep in your throat and you cannot retrieve it, that you should be potur is because how could you obligate him a chiyuv mita bidei shamayim? Here he was forced, he was an ones in the whole case. On the other hand, Tosafot says, why can't you just set it up? The Rashi says, set it up as a case where he wants the guy to put it in his throat. And since he wants to put it in his throat, there you could have a chiyuv mita bidei shamayim, but the Rashi says, maybe you should potur for the tashlumim, from the compensation, that's what the Gemara says. If it's in a point where he has no ability to retrieve it, then at that point in time, even though he does get hanah from it, that is not something that he should have to compensate for, because even if it's with his acquiescence and he knows that the individual is putting it there, by the mere fact that he cannot retrieve it, makes it that the gneva was already completed or done prior to the fact that he swallowed it. It says, the case where he could, with a lot of effort, retrieve it, but he chooses just to let it go. Oh, so very good. Rashi discusses what you're suggesting over here, which is, what happens when he sticks it far back in the guy's throat, at that point in time, okay, if he spit it back up, he would not be chayav for eating the truma. On the other hand, if he swallows it, then he is chayav for eating truma. What about the gneva? What type of tashlamim do you have here? Once you stick it that far back in the guy's throat, right, there is no value left to the item. Even if he spits it out, again, it's not returnable. It's not something that someone else is going to eat. It's ma'os. The answer is that there are different levels of hezek. There's levels of hezek, which is damage, physical damage to an item, where it's no longer usable. There's also damage, which is called hana'ah, the benefit that you derive from it. So you're right. Over here, you would not be chayav for physical damage to the item because you didn't have control of that. Once you stuck it in your mouth, or you stuck it in your throat and you spit it out, it's no longer usable as the item. But if you do swallow it, you get hana'ah. You got food. Food that you would otherwise have to eat something else instead of shuma that to fill your belly. The fact that you ate food and you got hana'ah from it, that you do have to compensate for. So you're right. You may not be fair for the hezek because you didn't create the hezek that detracted the value from an item that was before usable by someone else to an item that's only usable by you now. But you did get hana'ah. And the fact that you got hana'ah, you will be responsible for that hana'ah. And that's the tashlamim that we're talking about here. You're right. It's not the tashlamim of classic nezek, where you damage an object, because the damage happened as soon as you put it into your throat. But there is a secondary damage level, which is hana'ah. The benefit that you got, that you don't have to eat something else, and you ate this, that damage you do have to pay, and that will be what you would be exempted from in the chiyuv mita bidei shamayim. And Tosafot asked that question, and he says, Vashu lekli mar ni hadra, dein marvechim balim bekach. Even if he spits it back, what does the balim get? Begar kvar nimasu. It's already nimas. Yukach lecha chiyuv mamon. Ela yidei anat meyav. And therefore, the only hana here is when he swallows it and the benefit he gets. Vaz vayin kechad, and then they happen simultaneously. But no, because even though his friend stole it, hol v'yacholak zira, since he has the ability to retrieve it or get it back out, havigamoshi be'ein. It's as if the object is still extant. Varihu bol'a. And when he swallows it, v'neneba, that's as if he stole it. And therefore, the stealing or the acquiescing to the action of his friend by swallowing it is what creates the gneva. If he doesn't choose to spit it, the actual swallowing is what drives the chiyuv mita bidei shamayim for the consumption of the truma. But Papa Amar offers another alternative. Kosh katafalo achaveiro mashkim shel truma l'toch piv. He puts liquids into his mouth, because when it comes to something that is solid, then you can spit it back out. Whereas by liquids, you can't spit it back out. You spit it back out, there's nothing to talk about anymore. So there's a different level of zela, as Rashi explains over here. You don't even have to push it all the way to the back of his throat. Mekeven shetachva l'toch piv, imasalo. V'lo matzeh l'chuyuvei mishum zela. Soon as you put the liquid in your mouth, it's done, and there's no more zela. V'lo chazi l'mida. You can't use it again at all. Ela hanayat grono meyav michayiv. You're chayav for the hana'ah, the benefit that you get from swallowing it and putting it down. On the other hand, when it comes to something that's in the mouth, a solid object, you could spit it out. Could feed it to an animal afterwards. There are things that you can use it for. Maybe a human being wouldn't eat it, but you could spit it out. This does have nafkamino lalochot, and when we talk about the chiyuv brachot, person put something into their mouth, and they forgot to make a bracha, then do they have to spit it out? Or do they keep it in their mouth and make a bracha? That depends on what the item is. If it's a solid item, where you can spit it out without it becoming totally ma'us, then we ask you to spit it out, make the bracha, and then re-enter into your mouth. With liquids, if you spit them out, where it'll be ma'os, over there we say just push the liquids to the side, make the bracha, and then swallow it. So that's the same difference that's being posited over here, which is, when it comes to solids, you could spit it out and still retain some of the factor and not make it so ma'os. On the other hand, when it comes to liquids, once they're in your mouth, they are ma'os, and nobody would touch those at that point in time. And that's why, from then forward, whatever you do to swallow it, there's no hezek in the sense of classic hezek, but again, there's this problem of hana'ah, which you will be held accountable for. Now, there is an alternative answer, which Rav Ashi gives over here. Vashi Amar, Bizar Shachal Truma Mishalo, that a person ate his own truma, Bikara Shiraim Shel Chaveiro, and at the same time he tears the silk or the clothing of his friend. If he's eating his own truma, there's no thievery going over here. He didn't steal it. It's his own truma. Now he could be a czar that has his truma. It could be because of another situation that he came into possession of truma. Right? So when he's mafrish and he hasn't given it to the kohen, he may not own it. There might be gzela still, even though he has the tovatana, the right to give it to whom he wants, but it still belongs to the kohenim in general. But in a case where the kohen was already granted it, in that case, the kohen owns it. And since he owns it, he can now trade in it, he can sell it, but just you can't eat it. So now he owns the truma, there's no gneva over here. The only question is if he eats it or not. So there he eats it. And then the monetary obligation is created by the fact that he rips up the object of the other individual. Now this is not so simple because Rav Ashi over here is allowing there to be a dinim kamlim dirabimnei, even when the actions are totally separate. The swallowing of the chuma has nothing to do with ripping up the clothing or the product of another individual. Yet he's saying, since they happen simultaneously, you are granted that exemption. You can see in Rashi right away, Sfirle Rav Ashi, Mita Lezeb, Tashlim Lezeb Patur, that when the obligation of Mita goes to one individual, and the obligation of payment comes from another action or individual, that you are chayav. And clearly there are individuals who disagree with Rav Ashi. It is not so simple that we can take two disparate items and say that this individual acted in one way and then the other way is obligated, because either we need the action to be a single action. For instance, if one steals on Shabbat, at the same time that he steals, he also is violating Hotza'am Irshut HaYachid Irshut HaRabim. That's a single action by the individual, which obligates him in both things. That's why he would be exempted from the Tashlamim. That the Gemara in Baba Kama tries to figure out what the case is exactly, where he's stealing it and he becomes Chayav and Shabbat simultaneously. How do you create that case? But there it's one individual creating both of the problems. Or in a case where a person lights a fire on Shabbat, and in lighting that fire, he violates the Shabbat, but that same fire destroys the property of another individual. That's Tashlamim and Chayav Shabbat that derive from the same action. Over here, these two actions have nothing to do with it. He has one action, which is the swallowing of the truma. The other action is that simultaneously he's also ripping something, which is a totally separate action. It has nothing to do with the consumption of the truma. The thing that obligates him, chiyu b'dei shamayim, has nothing to do with him ripping up the clothing of his friend. Rav Ashi clearly sees that as being something that is exempted through commonly the Rabbi Minei, but there are clearly others who are going to disagree with Rav Ashi. Although Tosafot suggests that Rashi's wrong over here, and that it's really not called mita lezeh and tashlum lezeh, since it's a single individual who is acting in a simultaneous or concert, and therefore this is not called separation, and it is considered to be a single act of the individual, and it does not disagree with the principle that Rava establishes that you have to have them be simultaneous in order to get commonly the Rabbi Minei, and Rav Ashi is no different than that position of Rava. The Reed does try to defend the position of Rashi, though he quotes the Rashbo, disagrees, and then the Rabbeinu Tam actually comes up with a new Kiddush, which is that Mita Lezeh, V'Tashlim Lezeh, that does not qualify for commonly the Rabbi Minei, is only true by Hazama, by Edim Zomamim. That's where Rava invokes that principle and says that commonly the Rabbi Minei doesn't work. But he agrees in other situations, like the situation of Rav Ashi over here, where there's a single individual carrying out both Ma'asim, both actions, that in Okanami, commonly the Rabbi Minei would work, and you would be patur in this situation. So what Tosafot is trying to do is reconcile between Rav Ashi and Rava. Rava who says that they have to be simultaneous actions, and Rav Ashi who seems to indicate over here they do not have to be connected actions. So there are different ways to reconcile. Rashi says they're arguing. Tosafot brings one possibility that definitionally this is not called mita lezeh tashlim lezeh, or the possibility that Rava's definition of mita lezeh tashlim lezeh is much more narrow, only dealing with Edim Zomamim, And he would agree with Ravashi's statement over here. So again, he tries different ways by changing the definitions of either mita lezer, b'tashlim lezer, or by changing the scope of where that applies in order to reconcile between Ravashi in our Gemara and Rava in the Gemara in Bava Kamma. Now, you could use Ravashi's solution without his setup, which is just set up as Zar Shachal Chumash Shalo. In a case with Zar Shachal Chumash Shalo, there is no Gnevar Gzela, and then there is a Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shamayim that is created. Now, maybe over there you could argue that there is, even though the Truma is his, but since he was restricted from consuming it, when he gets the Hana over there, maybe he does have the monetary obligation to replace the Truma, because even though it's his Truma, he still has to grant it to somebody or he has to do something to deliver it to someone else. And maybe in that way, you could answer the question. It's clear that Ravashi believes that's not the case. If it's Truma Shalom, then there is no Inyan of Gneva and Tashlumim, and there's simply only the issue of Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shemaim. Okay, we're going to stop here on the top line of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph.